Hello, welcome to The Debate. I'm Kavitha Fayyib. The year 1948, during the war surrounding Israel's creation, more than 750,000 Palestinians fled or expelled from their homes. Palestinians referred to this exodus as Nakba, or catastrophe, and commemorated with protests on May 15 of each year. They and their descendants, who now number about 5 million, want to return to the lands in what is currently Israel, but not according to the U.S. President or Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, or even the Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who recently told Palestinians to shut up or make peace. Palestine, the subject of this debate. First, the massacre of the Gaza Strip. To get an update, we cross on over to the Gaza Strip and talk to Press TV's Hala Al-Safadi, who joins us. Curious as to you have for us, but more importantly, I'm guessing that the crisis really is now somewhat focused at the hospital Al-Shifa in terms of the people who are injured, who maybe can't receive treatment, and the state of the patients there.
Well, today, outraged Palestinians participated in rallies held at the buffer zone, again, to commemorate the 70th anniversary of the Nakba, or the Palestinian catastrophe. Now, although the numbers were far less than yesterday's, and the threat was less than yesterday's, yet Israeli forces continue to use excessive force against Palestinians. Two were killed today, and 250 others were injured. Also, Israeli arrested at least two Palestinian demonstrators today. But again, the scene looks so much different when it comes to the hospitals. The hospitals announced a state of emergency. They have called on international organizations and medical organizations to help bring aid or medical aid to Palestine or to Gaza. They've also called on Egypt to open the borders to allow injuries to get transferred abroad to hospitals in Egypt, and Egypt did accept to do so. Now, talking to doctors there, they have told us that they run out of painkillers, that they also run out of beds, and even the injuries are being treated in the corridors of the hospitals, and this is definitely due to a decade that has been lasting for over a decade now. So the crisis at the hospitals were there or existed before the Great Return March, and now it's only becoming worse with the huge flow of patients and injuries to the hospitals. We're talking about over 3,000 patients or injuries just from yesterday until today. We're also talking about 63 people who were killed in just 2 days. So basically, this is the main crisis the Gazans are facing right now in the hospitals and also in the so-called buffer zone between Gaza and the occupied territories. It is also worth mentioning that today Israeli troops were targeting journalists, and they were directly targeting us. I've witnessed this in my own eyes. A paramedic was praying in the buffer zone, and he was also targeted by tear gas canisters. Myself and my crew were also targeted by tear gas canisters, and they were throwing it directly on us. Let me mention here that we were not surrounded by any civilians. It was a group of journalists who were also around us. So it was very clear that we were on duty. We were wearing press jackets, and so did the paramedic who was also attacked.
Thank you for that point, and thank you for that coverage. That's Press TV's Hala Al-Safadi talking to us from the Gaza Strip. Let's bring in our guest from the Answer Coalition. Richard Becker joins us from San Francisco. We have author, historian, and political commentator Jeffrey Alderman, who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. So, Jeffrey Alderman, I'll start with you on a humanitarian note. The UN had a session, and you had the UN coordinator who spoke about what had happened. Basically, looking at about 3,000 injuries are correspondent there mentioned that you're looking at over 110 people who were killed. The UN is supposed to be able to, I guess, be able to accommodate injured people in a war type scenario. Israel claims that's a war landscape there, so they're free to do what they want, which we'll get into in a minute. Why do you think they're not acting when you're having a place like the Gaza Strip, whose hospital is barely functioning, dysfunctional, and you have all these people who are injured that may also die as a result of live fire?
Where Palestine, Israel is concerned, the United Nations organization is as dead as the dodo. It has no role to play, particularly because the present American administration will use its veto on the Security Council to veto any resolution that it thinks will harm Israel's essential interests. And that being the case, and of course one has seen the Russians use the veto, the Chinese as well, that being the case, the United Nations is simply paralyzed. There is really nothing it can do.
Well, Richard Becker, let's look at what has transpired. We're looking at, and I'm going to come at you with what Nikki Haley said. She said that the U.S. embassy relocation has nothing to do with the violence, one of the statements she said there. And also she mentioned the fact that Israel was restrained. It had a right to defend itself. And that was pretty much maybe 10% of what she mentioned, where most of it was putting blame on Iran and Hamas, and it was Hamas who did this, and Iran and Yemen, and so forth and so on. What is your impression of the way Nikki Haley has described the massacre that has taken place, which she didn't even touch on, really?
Well, I think that Joseph Goebbels would have been proud of Nikki Haley's performance today. He would have said, that's the way to go. Turn everything upside down and keep repeating the lie. Make it the big lie. And maybe you can win people over to something that is just absolutely outrageous, incredible. Her presentation that, you know, they had nothing to do with the moving of the U.S. embassy. Are you kidding? I mean, that's a bad joke. It had everything to do with that and to the dispossession of the Palestinian people, which continues. Al-Nakba continues. It continues in Jerusalem, where the driving out of the Palestinian population is going on every single day. And in Gaza, who are rebelling against this incredible oppression that they face and the repression that they face on a daily basis, we have to remember, are trapped inside a fenced-off area. They're trapped in Gaza, the biggest open-air prison in the world. 2 million people living under the most deplorable conditions and living just a few miles away from where their families used to be able to live in Palestine. And so they are doing what they can do out of desperation with great courage. And what's called the most moral army in the world by the Israeli leaders should be called the most cowardly army in the world, because they sit there shooting people who are defenseless, shooting and not only killing, but deliberately maiming as many people as possible, and then claiming it's because they're under attack. As I said at the beginning of my statement here, Joseph Goebbels would have been proud of Nikki Haley and the other members of the Trump administration who echo this line.
The Bolivian ambassador to the UN, Jeffrey Alderman, said that all he heard from Nikki Haley's mouth was Iran and Hamas, where the core of the problem is beyond that, and that is the occupation that needs to be addressed that hasn't been addressed. But Nikki Haley did address it in this form and manner. The location of our embassy has no bearing on Jerusalem, doesn't undermine a prospect for peace. Jerusalem al-Quds is Israel's capital, and Israel has a right to defend itself, along with the U.S. actions yesterday to promote peace.
Do you wish me to react to that?
Yes.
Yes. I think actually the most significant thing to come out of the White House in the last few days was an announcement at the very end of last week from the White House announcing the delegation that President Trump was sending to Israel for the opening of its Jerusalem embassy. And that announcement from the White House referred to Jerusalem, comma, Israel. And it is quite clear to me from that the Trump administration regards Jerusalem as an integral part of Israel. We all know what the gut causes of this dispute are, and I can sum them up as follows. It's the refusal of the Palestinian and in larger measure the Arab world to accept the legitimacy of the re-establishment of the Jewish state. That's what this quarrel is about. And as for a peace plan, I don't see any viable peace plan at the moment. Some months ago, I did say on Press TV that perhaps the only game in town had any chance was the Saudi Arabian people. But I'm afraid my view is now that not even that has any chance of success. There is no viable peace plan. There is certainly no peace process. And so the conflict will continue.
Well, that goes against what Sayed Hassan Nasrallah has said, Richard Brecker, yesterday in a speech. The Hezbollah Secretary General said that there's going to be a peace agreement that's going to be presented in the very near future, and I'm talking short term, maybe in the next few weeks, couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And he said that the rights of Palestinians will not be, obviously, it'll be violated. We can get into some of the details of what that may be, but he said that that's going to happen in the next few weeks. My question to you, Richard Brecker, is based on how we see Donald Trump and, of course, Saudi Arabia and Israel, cumulatively, they are going to dictate what the Palestinians can or cannot have. Do you think that when you get Palestinians that are being killed in the form and manner that they are, that to them, that shows that what they say is how it's going to be, that it's their way or the highway, whether Palestinians like it or not?
Yeah, that's what it's always been. There is no peace plan. And it's no peace plan because Israel has no interest in any plan. You know, and there was something called the Palestine Papers that came out about 2012, and it revealed that negotiations in 2008 when Zippy Livni, I think it was around 2008, but when Zippy Livni was the foreign minister of Israel, she met with Arafat and with the other negotiators, the Palestinian negotiators, and it was revealed that the Palestinians said to her, we accept all your conditions in regard to the West Bank and Gaza, and particularly the West Bank, that you control the borders, you control the airspace, you control the security, you control the water. And Zippy Livni had this very interesting response, and it was, well, I know that's probably very hard for you to say, but that doesn't meet our needs. So what are the needs of the state of Israel? To take more and more territory, to conquer more and more territory, to drive out in a slow motion form of al-Nakba, the Palestinian people from their homeland. That's what the Israelis seek. And they only pretend to entertain the idea of a two-state solution or some kind of peace plan for the benefit of the public in the United States, because that's what they need to deceive in order to keep getting the billions and billions of dollars every year in assistance from the U.S. and all the weaponry and the diplomatic protection, the protection at the United Nations. But they have no intention whatsoever of making any kind of an agreement. Their idea is to control all of Palestine and to remove as many of the Palestinians, force them to leave as possible.
Well, Jeffrey Alderman, I'm curious as to why you think there won't be a peace agreement. I mean, we just need to take a look at a recent event that happened, and that was the U.S. pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal because it's not the way they like it. I mean, they could just come out, write what they want on that piece of paper or whatever it is that they're going to cite it on and say to the Palestinians, this is what it is. Take it or leave it. And if you don't, we're going to dictate that onto you. We're going to force it onto you. And, of course, whatever paper they present on, and if they sign it, well, we know how the U.S. credibility comes when it comes to agreements.
Yes. Just used is if they sign it. You know, we have a saying in England, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And in the case of the Iran deal, the USA is a premier party to that deal. So, of course, Donald Trump can pull the USA out and effectively sabotage that plan. But in relation to a peace plan involving the Palestinians and the state of Israel, Donald Trump may well wave a piece of paper in front of the Palestinians, but can he make them sign it? Now, that I ask that as a genuine question. My own answer to that question would be almost certainly no, certainly not the present Palestinian leadership, either Fatah on the West Bank or Hamas in Gaza. They would not sign such a dictated agreement. Of course, they'd be left with the consequences. But I simply cannot, from a psychological point of view, sir, I cannot see them signing such an agreement, however hard President Trump bangs the table.
So if they're not going to sign it based on that scenario, and I know we're speculating here a bit, Richard Becker, don't you think they're just going to force them? They're going to say, okay, this is the area you're going to be in. Gaza is supposed to be one of those areas. They're going to try to displace Palestinians and maybe force some boundaries on them, whatever it might entail, basically using force, again, as a means to take Palestinians' rights away. Do you think that it's going to get down to that, or are we just not going to see a peace agreement signed, and therefore Israel is just going to continue doing what it's doing?
Well, I think we should look at what the Israeli objective is, to annex the land, but not to annex the population. This has been very, very clear. They were discussing this, by the way, in the Israeli consulate, in the Israeli cabinet, 3 days after the 1967 war. This discussion had already begun about what to do with the West Bank. There was no intention of having the West Bank go back to the Palestinians, nor is there any intention to do that today. So the reality of it on the ground today is what you just stated, that the Palestinians are limited to certain areas. Most of the West Bank is according to the Oslo Accord, which is a terrible agreement too, is under Israeli security. But what that means is the Israeli army occupies it. But in reality, even in Area A, which is supposed to be Palestinian security, the Israeli troops go in anytime they want to. They bust into people's homes. They drag people out. They imprison them illegally. They torture them, beat them, and so forth. And so there's really no sovereignty whatsoever. And then you have Gaza, which is this giant open-air prison where the Palestinians are in charge but have no mobility at all, have an unemployment rate that's the highest in the world, and faces conditions that a number of bodies have said that within a few years, Gaza will be unlivable at the present rate.
Well, one of the things that stands out that happened recently, Jeffrey Alderman, is the way the young prince from Saudi Arabia, MBS, talked about Palestinians, that they should shut up or make an agreement. He said, and I'm going to quote him, in the last several decades, the Palestinian leadership has missed one opportunity after the other and rejected all the peace proposals that it was given. Do you think that the Saudi prince or Saudi Arabia as a whole, along with some of the other Arab countries, where it is said that they are on board with a so-called peace agreement, can force Mahmoud Abbas to get on board and sign this?
That's a very interesting question. Can the Saudis and their allies force Mahmoud Abbas, who in my view is a busted flush, I think he's past his sell-by date, to force him to sign an agreement? I don't think they can. I'm being utterly realistic here. All sorts of sanctions might be brought to bear, but at the end of the day, I don't think there's any chance of Mahmoud Abbas being forced to sign such an agreement. There might be others in the Palestinian leadership who might be persuaded that the Saudi peace plan has the foundations of perhaps some settlement. But of that, I'm deeply cynical myself. Even with the Saudis and their allies behind such a peace plan, I do not think the current Palestinian leadership, either in Gaza or the West Bank, could be forced to sign such an agreement.
And I got to give 30 seconds to you, Richard Brecker. I mean, what we have seen in this massacre and the way that Nikki Haley spoke at the UN, doesn't that bring upon more critique of the U.S. supporting Israel in the former manner that it is? 30 seconds, please.
Well, I think that there's just tremendous outrage all over the world toward Haley, toward Trump, and in regard to Israel and the massacre that it's carried out. It's very appropriate, actually, I have to say, that on the 70th anniversary of the creation of the State of Israel, that a massacre was carried out while the celebration was going on, because 70 years ago, the State of Israel only came into being because of massacre after massacre after massacre that drove out the Palestinian population.
Very well, we're going to end it there. From the Answer Coalition, Richard Becker from San Francisco, thank you. And author, historian, and political commentator, Jeffrey Alderman from London. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Ikaba Taiwan and the entire team in the capital, Taiwan, it's goodbye.